The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. The information and ideas presented on this show are for informational purposes only. Please consult a business continuity, security, or disaster recovery professional before implementing any plans or ideas discussed on this show. The implementation of any protocol is at the sole discretion and responsibility of our listeners.
Is your business ready for a disaster, or are you prepared for anything? No matter the industry or structure of your organization, chances are there could be room for improvement regarding your survival business practices. This is Fear is Negotiable, Business Survival Skills 101. Your host is Pamela Hill. Join us today as we study what's working in business preparedness and what's still left to do. Here is Pamela Hill.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is Pam Hill, your host, and this is Fear is Negotiable, Business Survival Skills 101. Well, in the third segment of our Helping Our Heroes series, I'm continuing my salute to those who serve by talking one-on-one with one of my most memorable guests, John Cummings. John originally joined me back in October of 2013 in a show called Our Nation's Peacekeepers, The Struggle Within. I originally got the idea for that show when I started reading some statistics about the struggles of returning soldiers and veterans were having, especially the statistics regarding suicide, which are astounding. John's story, along with many others I've heard along the way, compelled me to shine a light on what I believe to be a national emergency. And today, we continue that conversation. So, as a reminder, John is a 9-year U.S. Army veteran that lost a fellow Army friend, C.J. Fishpaw, to suicide. John knows firsthand the issues facing our nation's veterans and is himself a shining example of triumph over tragedy. After a long struggle, John is now a firefighter paramedic with the Suwanee County Fire Rescue in Florida and a tactical medic for the county's SWAT team. Every year, John hosts the C.J. Fishpaw and Kyle Henry Memorial Walk to raise awareness of the issues facing our nation's peacekeepers. So welcome back to the show, John.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, really, really appreciate you coming back. So, and I always enjoy following you on Facebook as well. Following your antics.
Well, yeah. Crazy so I'd is like as to, crazy does.
Exactly. That's why we instantly liked each other. I'd like to start by talking about the statistics because I don't think you can overstate these, honestly. So why don't we start with that, the statistics of soldier and veteran suicides. To my mind, this number is staggering. Can you run some of those down for us?
Well, I don't have the current stats. I haven't been able to locate them. The last statistics that I had available to me were the 2012, and we were losing 23 veterans and soldiers a day to suicide. We were losing approximately one active duty member every hour during the year 2012. I'm still waiting for the 2013 statistics to come out. I don't know that they're out yet. The last report I got was through the VA.
Right, and those are active duty.
It was active duty. We were losing one active duty every hour.
Wow.
But we were losing 23... Yeah, it was 23 a day, soldier, active duty, and I forget, what were the...
I think it's like 22, isn't it? I know, it's a very similar
right
number.
Now,
yeah, with veterans.
I'm hearing the rumblings that it's about 22 a day this year, or
yeah.
For 2013.
Right. And, you know, I was just doing some reading on this, and what fascinated me is that for the veteran, suicides, the fact is they really have no idea, because if the funeral director doesn't write down that the person is a veteran, it's never tracked. And Texas,
yeah.
California, and I think Illinois are the three states that actually don't share their numbers. So those are, you know, three pretty populous states. So, you know, they're probably even bigger than what they've, you know, been, we've been led to believe.
Oh, absolutely. One, if they're not tracked in the states, the report that I saw was basing on 22 states reporting. So that leaves a wide margin of untracked numbers.
Oh, my goodness. Only 22 states.
Right.
That's really frightening to think of the what the real statistics would be. And these are the people
that,
you know, have actually taken action. I mean, think about how many people out there are suffering right now, you know, suffering in silence.
Right. And so, that's, you know, and that's a big issue, especially with PTSD and things like that. You know, a lot of people aren't tracked. They're not seeking help. They have their own little support networks, be it their family, or they just don't feel that it's, you know, their symptoms are bad enough to warrant seeking help. So they're dealing with it without, you know, those numbers even being thought of.
Wow. Now, John, I know you're not a psychologist, but I would like to talk about how people can recognize some of the signs of PTSD, you know, and how it presents itself, because my understanding is that this was sort of your experience for at least for a while. And I think that you could share a lot of really great insider wisdom here.
For PTSD as a whole, the symptoms vary. It's as many personalities as there are out there, you could have the same, you could say the same for the PTSD symptoms. A lot of them do, you know, are pretty common. Depression, people who are, you'll see, they tend to be more hypervigilant. We used to use the term head on a swivel when I was active. You know, mate, you were constantly looking. And some of these people still do that today, even though they're no longer serving, but they're so much keyed to it. They're, you know, that sense of, I don't know, I don't want to say paranoia, but they have that hyper awareness of what's going on around them all the time. They have to. They're compelled to do it. A lot of times there's nightmares involved. You know, it's depression, hopelessness, you know, these feelings. I mean, they just, there's such a wide gamut of different symptoms.
Yeah.
A lot of people tend to sometimes, I mean, I know you've heard the term flashback. You know, they'll relive these events sometimes, and the triggers are enormous. I mean, it could be anything. A smell could trigger, you know, any of these feelings or things that they have going on.
Is this generally after a traumatic event, or is this, you know, sort of presenting itself more as just the trauma of, you know, multiple deployments and all of that? Is this something that generally progresses over time?
It could be from one single event. Absolutely. I mean, one single event could do it. Some of it has to do a lot, you know, more with the multiple deployments. You know, we're trained to go, and we're trained to go and do these things, but nobody really trains us to come back from it.
Right.
So I mean, you know, when you're put in those situations where you're constantly having to be aware, and you're being put in that situation multiple times, I'm quite sure that it doesn't help the problem. It just adds to it.
Yeah, I would certainly think. I was just reading something not too long ago about, you know, you get in that warrior mindset, and then, you know, you come home and you're constantly, you know, in that condition orange or condition red, and it's, you know, it's because you've been trained to be like that, and it's a very valid reason why you're like that. But
right,
being able to step back from that step by step is really, really, you know, difficult. And I had on, I think it was either last week or the week before, Tampa chief of police, and she was talking about this same exact issue, basically, in police officers and in members of law enforcement and in firefighters as well, and how one of the things you have to really look for is changes over time, because it could be, if it's a traumatic event, you might see changes immediately, but if it's something that has been kind of progressive, that what you're really looking for is just any kind of, you know, significant change in behavior. You know, you're drinking more, not sleeping, you know, things like that.
Right.
It's quite an interesting conversation.
Yeah, a lot of times they'll have those changes in their beliefs and the way they feel about things. You know,
right.
they'll go from, you know, positive attitudes towards certain things to either not caring or absolutely not liking, you know, those same things that they were caring about before.
Right.
And those will progress over time, I'm sure.
Yeah. Why do you think so many people suffer in silence? Is it difficult to seek help, or why is it difficult to seek help, actually? Is it just because people are embarrassed or they don't really recognize the signs? And what do you think?
I think a lot of it is, I guess, bravado. You know, I'm tough enough to deal with this. I don't need help. It's, you know. And a lot of it, too, is, you know, the general public's not really, they don't fully understand what PTSD is. And so along with that label comes a certain stigma that a lot of folks, they just don't want to be saddled with that label. So
right.
they tend to avoid it.
And I would think if you're active duty, that there has to be the feeling that, you know, that you would get labeled and people would sort of judge you
right.
while you're still in the service as well.
Absolutely. And when you're out, people go, oh, you know, they hear PTSD, they label it along with other mental health issues. So now it's not just it's not the soldier battling PTSD, it's the crazy veteran.
Right.
You know, and people, you know, I mean, who would want that label?
Yeah.
So they tend to try to, you know, they tend to more or less keep to themselves and, you know, keep that part of their lives hidden.
Absolutely. John, we have to go to commercial break now, but when we come back, I want you to, last time I asked you to tell your story and I ended up having to cut you off, and this time I'm going to give you the full segment because your story is so compelling. So this is Pam Hill. I'm here with John Cummings, and we'll be right back.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. From disasters to cyber threats, it's hard to keep up with the myriad of risks facing businesses today. Risk Partners Alliance is a consortium of business and technology consultants whose focus is to identify and mitigate threats to the operation of your business, your critical systems, infrastructure, and information security. We create comprehensive business continuity programs, including risk assessment, emergency preparedness, crisis management planning, technical disaster recovery, and information security services. We provide hands-on crisis leadership team evaluation and training through scenario-based practices. Our experts are widely sought-after speakers because of their passion, excellence, and unique training methods, and have a 30-year track record of providing risk management and recovery services to a variety of industries. Our proven plans have been put into action in every major disaster since 1989. Find us online at riskpa.com or email info@riskpa.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @FearIsNegotiable. You deserve some rest from worry. Contact us so we can help.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. You are tuned in to Fear is Negotiable, Business Survival Skills 101. If you have a question or comment about the program, please send us an email to info@riskpa.com. Again, that's info@riskpa.com. Or follow us on Twitter @FearIsNegotiable. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Pam Hill, and this is Fears Negotiable. I'm here with John Cummings, and we are talking about PTSD and veteran and soldier suicide. So, John, I really want to take now the whole segment, if we need to, for you to tell us your story. This was the thing that was so compelling to me. Not only are you a great narrator, but also your story is really important, and as well as the story about the memorial walk that you do each year. I know this topic is really near and dear to your heart. So tell us your story and why you do the memorial walk.
Okay. Well, last year, I believe it was around August, I had read a report through the VA about the suicide rates. And it really kind of struck a nerve with me. It really affected me a lot, and I decided that I needed to do something. You know, I'm just one guy, but, you know, even one person can change the world if they do the right thing. So I gave it some thought and wanted to raise the awareness and things like that, and CJ Fishpaul was a very close friend of mine. We served together in the Army. We deployed to Saudi Arabia, Cuba, and, you know, other places around. And we became very close. And he ended up committing suicide one night during an argument with his new wife. They had only been married a couple months, but I think the deployments weren't helping the situation. They were newlyweds, and he was gone. Really affected me. I was part of the group that took his remains home, and it just affected me so hard because I guess guilt. I was CJ's team leader. And a team leader's job, more or less, is to keep their people alive. And I just, you know, played the what-if game and realized that I hadn't done my job. And I felt very, very guilty over that. So much so that I made an attempt on my own life that was interrupted. To this day, it still affects me. But I want to do something so that others don't have to go through it. There's a lot of unanswered questions, and when someone commits suicide, that there will never be an answer to, and that's a big hole left in the families that are, you know, that are affected by this. So that's where the first part of my memorial walk's name came from. The second part, Kyle Henry, was a reserve infantry soldier and medic. He was a firefighter paramedic with Hillsborough County Fire Rescue in down near Tampa. And he committed suicide, leaving a dog behind. His best friend and his mother were trying to find this dog a home. Neither one of them could take her. So my wife and I threw our hat in the ring, and lo and behold, his best friend, Sean McManus, contacted me, found out my story, that I was infantry, I was a firefighter paramedic, and he told me that he was going to contact Kyle Henry's mom and let her know that the decision was made, and that I would be getting her. And so we now have Kyle Henry's dog living with us. And we've got together. Sean McManus, Kyle Henry's best friend, actually came up from Tampa last year and did the walk with us. We do a 25-mile walk through Suwanee County, Florida. We're trying to raise awareness and try to get people to educate themselves and possibly help educate them on PTSD, what it is. And at the same time, we try to raise money. This year, as well as last year, we're raising funds for Canines for Warriors. They're a great organization, all volunteer. They're providing service PTSD service canines for our post 9/11 veterans at no cost. These individuals, all they have to do is get to the facility over in Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida. At that point, they're housed, they're fed, and they're trained with their new service canine for 3 weeks, all at no cost. 96 cents of everything they raise goes right back into their program, and they're doing good stuff. They're growing. They've recently acquired some more land, and they're going to be building a newer facility to where they can help more veterans get the help they need through these canines.
And now, was the dog that you got, was that a Canines for Warriors dog?
No, ma'am. His Kyle Henry's dog, her name is actually Misfire. go figure.
He must have named her.
Well, his doctor had basically told him, you know, get a dog. Dogs help.
Right.
So basically, she was more of a companion animal. She wasn't an actual service canine.
Okay. Yeah, and I would really strongly recommend that anybody listening to this get on there. I think it's K9s, literally K9forWarriors.org, and take a look at their site, because they are changing lives in a really, really big way. And it is these, I believe they're all rescue dogs, if I remember correctly. And it is not an inexpensive endeavor to be able to train the dogs and then obviously match them up with a veteran. But it's an awesome organization.
Yeah, I believe 95% of their service canines are rescues.
Yeah.
I've seen Labradoodles and all sorts of mixed breeds. Some are, you know, labs, but they're doing great stuff. I had an opportunity to meet with a lot of them at the Northeast Florida Highland Games over in Green Cove Springs January or February. But it was a great opportunity just to sit and talk with some of these folks, see where they've come from and see where they're at. We've even had one or two of the graduates mentioned coming over and doing the walk with us this year.
Oh, wouldn't that be great? That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to it. I think that would be absolutely awesome.
Yeah. John, do you think that these most recent wars, they've just gone on for so long, it seems like. Do you think that these wars have taken a different type of toll on the soldiers because of the length of them, you know, these multiple deployments? I mean, this really isn't your grandfather's war.
No, I don't know that it's the length of the war so much as it is the multiple deployments. You know, and back in, like, Vietnam, you know, guys came in, they did their tour, and that was it. A lot, you know, there was a great number of those guys that were drafted. They did their time, and they were done. We're an all-volunteer army now. And I think a lot of it has to do with the multiple deployments. Part of it is the fact that it's gone on so long, but what that's generating, because it's gone on so long, is requiring more and more deployments from these guys. So they're being exposed to that environment several times versus just one or two, as it was, say, in Vietnam.
Right, and some of these people, actually, I would think a lot of them, I don't know the statistics, but these aren't regular Army. You know, some of these are National Guard people that, you know, sign up for one weekend a year and, you know, two weeks a year kind of a thing, and now they're, you know, going through multiple deployments as well. I just can't imagine that the training level is the same. That's no, by the way, that's no slight to anybody. That's just a fact of the matter, you know.
Right. This isn't something that they're exposed to every day. It's their daily job, like a regular active duty soldier. These are guys that are, you know, 9-to-5ers with their family and friends, except for one weekend a month and 2 weeks out of the year. Out of the summers, usually, and now they're being called in for, you know, 1 year, 9 months, or, you know, whatever the deployments are. I have a friend of mine, he's in the process, he'll be heading to Afghanistan here fairly soon. He's a reservist, but, and I believe he's been before. So not only are we having our active duty guys doing multiple deployments, our reserve and National Guard folks are doing multiple deployments also.
And I don't know that people are really aware of that anymore, because it really doesn't – it used to – you know, at the beginning, it used to get talked about, but it doesn't seem like that really gets raised, you know, very much. And, you know, again, that's no slight on National Guard. I just can't imagine if you haven't, you know, spent the, you know, pretty much 24/7 – you know, in the service, when this is all that you do, that you're going to be trained to the same level, especially the mental, you know, part of this, which is, you know, 50%, if not more, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. I've often said it, you know, in discussions with friends of mine and whatnot, and they tend to agree with me that our military is not doing our young soldiers any favors. You know, they've kind of eased up on how things are, you know, so, you know, kids in basic training, you know, they can't be yelled at as harsh and things like that as they were back, you know, say like when I was going through basic training, which wasn't anywhere near what it was for guys coming in during Vietnam. You know, their basic training was a lot harsher. That you could get away with a lot more, you know, the drill sergeants could, but they've eased up on a lot of that stuff now, and I don't know that that's doing these kids any favors. They're not being mentally prepared for that type of stress.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. And that kind of stress that goes, oh, you know, over and over and over and over and over the years of these multiple deployments that goes back at, and I would think every deployment makes things just a little bit worse. It's not like you come to this, you know, great realization that, oh, well, I have to go there. It's, you know, it's chinking away at you. I haven't been in the service, but I would certainly think that's a fair assessment.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, and realistically, I mean, it's not just our military though. I mean, our emergency services people deal with things, and it builds, it compounds over time. I mean, you see
people, absolutely.
You know, 15, 20 years into their career, you know, the younger guys are like, oh, he's just burned out. Well, you know, it's probably a little more than that. He's, you know, it's not that he's just tired of doing the job. It's the things that they've had to witness and do over that job.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've already done one show on that, and I actually plan on doing another one specifically around law enforcement, although most of the statistics are actually around firefighters, that they, you know, how much higher risk they are for suicide and PTSD as well. It's a, you know, all of this, anything I can do to get this out in the open, I think is important for people to know. We have
to take
a break now. You know, John, but I, when we come back, I want you to tell somebody listening to this, you know, to this show, what you want them to do, if they're experiencing these symptoms. So this is Pam Hill. I'm here with John Cummings. This is Fear is Negotiable, and we'll be right back.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. From disasters to cyber threats, it's hard to keep up with the myriad of risks facing businesses today. Risk Partners Alliance is a consortium of business and technology consultants whose focus is to identify and mitigate threats to the operation of your business, your critical systems, infrastructure, and information security. We create comprehensive business continuity programs, including risk assessment, emergency preparedness, crisis management planning, technical disaster recovery, and information security services. We provide hands-on crisis leadership team evaluation and training through scenario-based practices. Our experts are widely sought-after speakers because of their passion, excellence, and unique training methods, and have a 30-year track record of providing risk management and recovery services to a variety of industries. Our proven plans have been put into action in every major disaster since 1989. Find us online at riskpa.com or email info@riskpa.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @FearIsNegotiable. You deserve some rest from worry. Contact us so we can help.
Follow us on Twitter @VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's Voice America TRN.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are tuned in to Fear is Negotiable, Business Survival Skills 101. If you have a question or comment about the program, please send us an email to info@riskpa.com. Again, that's info@riskpa.com. Or follow us on Twitter at Fear is Negotiable. Now, back to the program.
Hey, welcome back to the show, everyone. This is Pam Hill, and I'm here with John Cummings, and we are talking about PTSD and the high suicide rate in veterans and soldiers. So, John, obviously not all people suffering from PTSD will attempt suicide. As a matter of fact, this statistically, it's actually a relatively small number, thank God. But the fact is that a lot of people do. You know, what do you want them to know? If this is somebody listening to this show and they're, you know, kind of getting in that mindset, I mean, what do you want them to know?
In all honesty, from the bottom of my heart, I want them to know that it's suicide is definitely not the answer. It's a permanent solution to a temporary problem. If they've served in the military, their willpower is there. Their strength is there. I know it is. They made it through the military. Find somebody to talk to, whether it's family or whether it's another veteran. I know that's a big deal. The general public doesn't understand a lot of times what our soldiers and sailors and Marines have been through, and they can't. Unless they've walked that road, they'll never really know. And I think that's an issue with a lot of our veterans. They don't want to talk to people because they know they've tried and they know they can't explain it. But there's brothers and sisters out there that are willing to listen. I'm one of them. There's several good organizations that I know of. One of them is Warrior Point. You can find them on Facebook. Another group, Battle in Distress, is another veteran. They're all veterans. A lot of them are dealing with their own PTSD and TBI issues. Contact them. They'll find somebody close to you who can link up. You can have coffee, whatever, but find somebody to talk to. Find somebody you can trust. And just know that it's not the end of the world. Things seem tough, but you can get through it. I know they're able.
What advice would you have for the loved ones or the families of somebody going through this?
Education. Learn everything you can possibly learn about their condition, whether it's a traumatic brain injury or PTSD or just general depression. Learn everything you can learn about it. And know your own limitations. The individual doesn't necessarily have to call a therapist. The family can do that, and they can help that way. There's professionals out there that are they know what they're doing, and they're willing to help you. Don't write them off.
Right. And one of the things I think you sign up for, I know from experience in the first responder community, but I would imagine in the military as well, that you really sign up for a family on some level. I mean, some of the family members, just like in your real family, you don't necessarily want to hang out with, but there's a lot of family members that you actually really do want to hang out with. And these people want to help you. And just as I'm sure that everybody listening wants to help someone else. That's one of the great things about emergency services, I think.
Downrange, why we're at war as a nation and the politics and all that never comes to a soldier's mind. It's always about the guys to his left and right. That's who he's fighting for.
That's very, very important for people to understand, I think. You just mentioned this a couple of times, and I want to talk about this, that the link between traumatic brain injury and suicide, there's all kinds of research on this. And can you kind of explain what that linkage is? Because I think this is really important for people to know.
Yeah, the link is somewhat interesting, actually. In some of the readings that I've been doing, I read an article that discussed some studies done that were conducted by Craig Bryan. He's the assistant professor of psychology at the University of Utah. And he did a study of active duty soldiers in Iraq in 2009. And what he found out was, now, traumatic brain injury, or TBI, is such a broad term. It can mean, a traumatic brain injury could be as simple as a concussion, or it could be as dramatic as receiving shrapnel from an IED. So it's kind of a broad term. But what he found out was that almost 22% of individuals who experienced more than one traumatic brain injury in their lifetime reported thoughts or preoccupation with suicide.
Wow.
Compared to 6% of patients with only one TBI. And those with no history of TBI reported no suicidal thoughts. And that just really struck me that it was that in depth. So, if you get, you almost have to wonder about a boxer. That
right.
guy who's been knocked out with a concussion several times in his life, where does that leave them?
Or a football player, yeah, and this is just now really getting a lot of press.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
But I didn't realize the statistics were that high. And the reason I wanted to make sure we brought this up, and I was glad you did actually a couple of times, is that if you are the family member of somebody who's experienced this, this is something that you need to know.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's a lot of crossover symptoms between traumatic brain injuries and PTSD. But their symptoms really are different. A lot of the depression and things like that are very common in both sides.
Right.
But then there's, other symptoms that are completely different.
Right. Now, so what's going on with the U.S. government? Okay, insert joke here. what are some of the actions the U.S. government or the VA are taking or not taking to address this problem? Because this is getting a lot of press. So,
right, yeah, the VA has been coming under fire here lately, with their wait times and things like that. Personally, I think they were a little overwhelmed. I don't think that they were prepared for the numbers that they were going to get coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan. I really don't. In the early days of Vietnam, they were delivering death notifications via messenger because they weren't prepared for the numbers. And I think that's translated a little bit through the VA and the military health system. I don't think they were prepared for the number of, PTSD and traumatic brain injury patients that they're having to deal with now.
Yeah, isn't that something? I actually was just reading that the the government has so many things right now going for military and veterans and, trying to kind of allay this wave that they literally cannot even list it anymore, which, of course, begs to the question of how effective is it if we don't even know it's out there and actually being done.
Right. to this day, there's still, I don't know if you remember, there was an issue back in the first Gulf War. It was the Gulf War syndrome.
Right.
They're still working on that.
Yeah.
They're just now getting to the point where, we've identified that if a veteran presents with these symptoms or these diagnoses, they're just now starting to automatically link it. where they don't have to file for it and prove service connected. They're assuming at this point that these symptoms or these conditions are associated with.
Isn't that something after all these years?
And after all these years that we're just now getting around to that. But, you know, it's kind of, it's our government. It's a slow roll.
Yeah, it's slow roll. That's a great way to put it. It's absolutely a slow roll. Do you think that the soldiers feel supported by the government when they do come home?
That's a difficult one. I know when I got out. Now I got out in '96, and it was kind of thanks for your time, adios. There wasn't really a whole lot to it. I don't know how much support these guys feel like they're getting. I've talked to several, and they seem to feel like all they get is run around. Not so much from the government, but through the VA. But I think it's a lot of that, you know, there's just so much red tape. They have to prove this, and they have to provide this, and, you know, they just feel a lot of frustration with it. I just really wish they could maybe streamline the system and come up with a way that makes it easier for these guys to get to the help that they need.
Yeah, absolutely. Somebody keeps posting on Facebook, because I'm sure you've seen it, that, you know, why is it the veterans have to wait this long, you know, to get their benefits, but welfare people can sign up basically and get their benefits almost immediately. It just doesn't make a lot of sense when somebody served their country and, you know, here there's, you know, significant delays. So
yeah, exactly. And I think that's what, you know, a lot of the frustration and I guess animosity towards government comes from is, you know, they're treated this way, but yet they're seeing, you know, folks that are not even willing to try or do anything, but yet they're getting these benefits, you know, almost thrown at them without even trying.
Yeah. Well, John, we could spend an entire hour just talking about that.
Yeah, probably.
We need to go to break now. This is Pam Hill. This is Fear is Negotiable, and we'll be right back.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network. From disasters to cyber threats, it's hard to keep up with the myriad of risks facing businesses today. Risk Partners Alliance is a consortium of business and technology consultants whose focus is to identify and mitigate threats to the operation of your business, your critical systems, infrastructure, and information security. We create comprehensive business continuity programs, including risk assessment, emergency preparedness, crisis management planning, technical disaster recovery, and information security services. We provide hands-on crisis leadership team evaluation and training through scenario-based practices. Our experts are widely sought-after speakers because of their passion, excellence, and unique training methods, and have a 30-year track record of providing risk management and recovery services to a variety of industries. Our proven plans have been put into action in every major disaster since 1989. Find us online at riskpa.com or email info@riskpa.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @FearIsNegotiable. You deserve some rest from worry. Contact us so we can help.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business. You are tuned in to Fear is Negotiable, Business Survival Skills 101. If you have a question or comment about the program, please send us an email to info@riskpa.com. Again, that's info@riskpa.com. Or follow us on Twitter @FearIsNegotiable. Now, back to the program.
Hey, Welcome back to the show, everyone. This is Pam Hill, and I'm here with John Cummings. And John, I want to talk now about one of the few of the things that civilians either don't know or don't do for veterans or returning soldiers that would just simply, you know, make their life easier or help them in understanding what they're really going through. So this is your chance to speak for soldiers and veterans. You know, what are we not doing that we need to be doing?
Educating. learn as, like I said before, learn as much as they can about PTSD, understand what it is, withhold judgment, don't judge. These guys have walked a road that a lot of people will never see, let alone walk on. And, you know, it's, they feel judged a lot of times. But I would just say, you know, give your best effort to educate yourselves and you know, try to understand maybe where these guys are coming from.
Judged in what way?
What's that?
Judged in what way?
There's a stigma that comes along with the, you know, with PTSD. It's the crazy veteran.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are always afraid that, oh, he served in combat. He's probably got that PTSD. You know, he's going to come in here one day and shoot the place up. And that's not the case. These guys are the least likely to come in and shoot a place up. You know, these are guys that take their own lives instead.
Right. Yeah, and that's statistically proven.
That's
not just you saying that. Yeah.
No. These are the numbers prove it. These guys are more likely to take their own lives than they are to come into some business and shoot the place up. So, you know, that stigma that goes along with it, we need to get rid of that. We need to, you know, help people to understand that it's an issue. It's as real an injury, you know, and the feelings they have and the symptoms they have are just as real as, you know, blood coming from a knife wound. They're the same thing.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy. Do you think that this plays, that kind of judgment plays into hiring decisions sometimes with veterans?
Oh, absolutely. I know of one case that I was told about. I haven't done the actual research on it, but a veteran was made it to the interview process, and when it came up in the interview that he was a veteran, at the end of the interview, he was told that he wouldn't fit in. You know, so that was a job missed out.
No explanation other than just he wouldn't fit in.
Yeah, they didn't want to do the, didn't want to pull any kind of funny stuff. But, you know, that individual just wouldn't fit in that environment.
Right.
So he didn't get the job. My understanding is withheld that level of information on his next interview and was hired.
Wow.
It's out there. The people, you know, they don't understand what it is, so it turns into the crazy veteran. And it's just not the case. These guys are, you know, these are people that they're hurting. You know, they're not sleeping well. Yeah. They're remembering things that nobody should ever have to see for the first time, let alone remember. You know,
right? And see it multiple times through the multiple deployments.
Absolutely.
You know, anybody who's ever met young people these days, I'll tell you, when I was still making hiring decisions, I would absolutely have hired a veteran because these are folks that actually can take command. They can, they're structured. They actually do what they say they're going to do. I mean, there's just so many benefits to, to my mind, to hiring somebody who's got that mindset of, you know, we're a team and it takes every single piston firing for that team to work effectively versus the people that you meet nowadays, which are like, whatever. I mean, their whole attitude is whatever.
Right.
It's all about them, not about them.
And that's exactly where these veterans are coming from. They're coming from an environment where, you know, it's the individual is just an important component to the team because the team
exactly.
is what makes things happen.
Absolutely. And that's true in businesses. It's true anywhere you go in the first responder community or, you know, in the military as well. And
right.
It's something that's really been lost by an entire generation. I actually did a whole show on this, but it really has been lost by an entire generation, this me generation. And so, you know, I would hire a veteran tomorrow, you know, if I had that capability and need right now. We only have a couple of minutes before the end of the show, but I do want to give you a chance to talk just a little bit about some of the issues of transitioning back home. I know you've alluded this a couple of times or mentioned it, that, you know, you're kind of always in that condition red or condition orange, and it's hard to kind of come back to this normal, you know, seemingly normal life and really make a simple transition back to it. So if you could just spend a couple of minutes talking about it, and then I want you to tell the listeners how they can find out about your memorial walk.
Oh, okay. You know, it, coming from the military, you know, you're especially with multiple deployments, and I think it really affected more by the deployment, coming back from a deployment versus just getting out of the military. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some issues there, but the returning from the deployment is really the tough one. That's, you know, these guys are on a constant head on a swivel, hypervigilant throughout their deployments, only to come home and there's no threat here, but they're always looking for it. Mm-hmm. And it's a tough transition. It just, you know, if you're a family member or a friend, patience. You know, through over time, you kind of can start to relax over time when you get back and you realize, okay, not everything is out to kill you. You know, and it just takes some time to unwind from that. It's, you can't go from that level to no level, you know, at the drop of a hat. It just takes a little bit of time. And, you know, if you know them, just be patient. Be understanding.
Yeah. And I would think, too, and again, I haven't been in the military, so I don't know this, but, you know, the fact that the things that are coming out of, you know, Afghanistan and such now are, you know, these people that are the locals that they're bringing in, you know, into the fold, allowing them access. And these people are turning around and turning guns on our military, the people who've trained them and who've befriended them. And I would just think that that's got to make it even 10 times harder, you know, when you've accepted somebody into the family, essentially, and then they turn on you. That's got to make it even worse, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't even imagine. I mean, you know, my day, we didn't have that issue so much. But, yeah, I could see where that would be a definite hindrance to the calming down.
Yeah.
You know, after coming home, you know, because you've learned that the people that you thought you could trust, you can't. And now you're amongst everybody you think you're supposed to be able to trust.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us how the listeners, how they can help with your cause? Because even though the memorial walk isn't anytime soon, I know you're doing fundraising for it right now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We decided last year's event, we went from idea in my head to mission complete in just over a month and a half. This year, we decided to start a little early, so we have our site set up. We're on Facebook. It's the CJ Fishpaw and Kyle Henry Memorial Walk, or you can just look it up under facebook.com/PTSD Memorial Walk. And
okay,
this year,
and I googled it yesterday,
huh?
And it comes up. I googled it yesterday, and it comes right up.
Oh, did it? Okay, awesome. we also have a website now with links to our fundraising site. We're using CrowdRise. That way, we don't have any contact with any of the funds.
Right.
People can go on our CrowdRise site and donate, and it goes straight to Canines for Warriors. And it's there, you know, those are tax deductible donations through Canines.
Right.
But our website is noonforgotten.org.
Noonforgotten.org?
Okay. Noonforgotten.org. N-O-O-N-E-F-O-R-G-O-T-T-E-N.org.
Okay, great. Well, John, thank you so much for joining me again today, and thanks to the listeners as well. Next week, I have a guest host, Mike Roach, who will be telling us how to recognize deception in how people communicate with us. Until then, remember that fear is negotiable, but only through planning, training, and preparation. There is no other way. Safe travels, everyone.
Thank you for joining us this week for Fear is Negotiable, Business Survival Skills 101. We hope you'll tune in again next Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time for another edition with host Pamela Hill on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll identify more of the best practices in business survival then.
The information and ideas presented on this show are for informational purposes only. Please consult a business continuity, security, or disaster recovery professional before implementing any plans or ideas discussed on this show. The implementation of any protocol is at the sole discretion and responsibility of our listeners.